So, who are you?
I'm Sampy. So, Sampy. Mike Sampson, I'm a developer on the VB team, and we're here today to talk about MQ and the quality milestone that's coming after WIDB before the next version of Visual Studio.
MQ. What does that stand for?
Well, quality milestone, I guess, yeah. But we switched it because all of our other milestones are like M1, M2, okay. M3, so we call it MQ.
Cool. And who are we with?
We're here with a lot of people, so I guess you guys can introduce yourselves to the camera.
or to Robert, I guess.
Yeah. Well, my name is Carol Grogine, and I'm the project manager of the MQ milestone.
Awesome.
Hi, I'm Doug Amaral. I'm the director of development for DevDiv.
Okay.
Hello, I'm Barton Place. I'm director of test for developer division.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we got some pretty important people here today. I guess we'll get things started with kind of why MQ? Why kind of take this time out of our schedule to like stop developing products and to kind of focus on fixing, or I guess not fixing, but changing the process to kind of, well, why focus on
that? So I'll talk about that a little bit. So the basic concept behind MQ is that whenever you have big, long product cycles with big divisions like we have, you need some time in between those big releases to do some housekeeping, if you will, and also to go back and look at what you're doing and say, are there certain things we need to change? So in our case, we've got some bugs to deal with. We've got some processes to change. We've got some cultural things to adjust to, which take time. And so we decided that it would be a really good idea for us to take the break now and before we really fully engage in Orcus and the post-Orcus stuff, and to make those adjustments now, because it's hard to do those things in flight. So we tried to do some things during WIDB, which was our last release, and found it kind of hard to do that because everyone has a priority of shipping product. And so this gives us a little bit of a downtime to say, what do we need to change? How can we change it? And not just what we think as kind of the directors of X and Y or whatever, but also what does the division as a whole think we should change? So that was the basic idea behind any MQ.
So there's a lot of developers, a lot of people on DevDiv.
Yeah.
Do you guys all get into one room and sort of, is that very useful? Probably not. So there's probably, you're splitting up how do you do this for a month, take off some time and get some real change the process?
So while while we were all engaged in releasing WIDB, we started these discussions with groups of like dev managers and test managers and the GPMs and just folks around the division. There's always any division, any group of people, there's always the people who are ready and able to provide good opinions and what needs to change. Yeah. We really tried to just take the temperature of the division and came up with a starting list of things that we'd want to change or want to impact, and that's where we started. Our group was not so much to come up with all the ideas, it was really to coalesce things. So
is this only an internal thing, or is this something that customers can participate with too?
It is not something that customers participate in. It's strictly an internal thing for this time. The customers, of course, will get the benefit of the impact of the changes. Okay. But until we get completely transparent with the way we do business, I think it'd be really hard for a customer to participate in a way that would be a good use of their time.
And good experience.
Yeah. Because we do things differently in DevDiv probably than a lot of our customers because of the scope of things we've got to change.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Boss. Come on in. So who's this who just came in the door? Who are you?
Just a guy. Who am I? I'm just trying to help these guys do a great job.
So who are you? What's your name?
My name is Amnon Horowitz, and I'm the Product Unit Manager for Developer Division Engineering.
Wow. Okay. So does somebody like him come to you and say, to the team that's running MQ, and say, we need to ship in 16 months instead of 18 months, and we have to figure out how to... I mean, what are some of the driving forces that are forcing you guys to say, we need to change our process here?
So, I'm going to monopolize the time here. So, the core piece that kind of yielded all these things is that it's development in our world is really hard. And what are the pain points and how can we eliminate those guys? So it takes a, it's a very practical standpoint. We could have taken a purity of engineering standpoint, say we want to follow this methodology X to the letter and how do we do that, but that's not the approach we took. From my perspective, it's about how can we enable the folks in our division to be more successful so they can actually spend their time dealing with their customer issues and delivering to their customers and not about the mechanics of living inside of a division this big or the mechanics of delivering something as big as Visual Studio. So that's where if you look at our list of proposals that we have that have been adopted to get done during MQ, they're, most of them are within that vein. Like how can it, how does it just make our lives easier to be more agile, to be able to deliver,
be more responsive,
Right.
We actually went out to the group, all the developer division starting back in July and started asking for ideas, started soliciting, you know, kind of abstracts, and then around the August timeframe, we actually had people started writing up proposals, you know, kind of give us the value prop around why you think this would be a good change for the division to take on, what would be the return on the investment. And so today we've gotten over 90 of them, so there's a lot of really great ideas out there. People really energized around making the development experience a much better experience, a much, you know, deliver a higher quality product much faster.
Yeah.
And so we're executing on 33 of them this time, but now we already have, you know, a great backlog of ideas that we can either try to do during the next cycle or do during the next MQ if we choose to do another one. But really, a lot of what we had to do this time was just get our, you know, our infrastructure and our house cleaned up, get our debt paid off.
So is this sort of like a post-mortem? Do you look at the, hey, what did we do for the last 4 years? Or how long did it take to ship Woodby from start to finish?
Depending on if you were an early team, in other words. So let's say 4 years. I think that's a good
so you do these at the end of one process and say, what did we learn over the last 4 years?
Well, it was actually a little more organic than that. So, like for myself, I came into this role about a year ago. And my primary concern the entire time I've been in this gig, right, is let's ship Woodby and how can we do it and what do we need to do from an engineering standpoint to make that happen? And so I'm in this stuff every day, right? I'm in the muck. And so a lot of the things we didn't have to go through, we didn't have to go do some offsite at some, you know, place to yield the number of things we needed to change. It became self-evident just through getting through Woodby.
Yeah.
So no, we haven't done we haven't had a post-mortem event where everybody sits and writes on white tablets and does all that kind of stuff. But we've had those discussions time and time again about, you know, why is this hard or why is this, how could this be easier and, you know, what are these teams doing and why is it easier for them and how can we roll that out across everybody? And that's the responsibility of our group, right? Is one of it is, you know, shining a light on things and saying, hey, that's too hard or that's really easy for these guys and how can we make it better for everybody? That's the developer division, a little history is that, you know, we are essentially 30 independent product units that are have, you know, high degree of dependence on dependencies on each other. And our group was formed to help eliminate, some of those
dependencies.
Exactly. And also,
because the more dependencies you have, the longer the ship cycle goes.
Yeah, exactly.
The more meetings you have to attend, right?
The harder it is, right? It's the coordinating pieces, right? It's all those moving bits. It's
the communication and collaboration overhead is a high cost. We need to make it a much lower cost. Find some similarities in our processes so that people have the same expectation from group to group. They know what to expect from each other.
Right. Now, if I'm on the outside watching it, if this video ever gets out to the outside world, I'm trying to think, well, what does this mean to me? What can I learn from Microsoft's mistakes internally or what from their learning, you know, that you're going through?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to apply what you guys are going through to my own job, you know, outside? Is there anything that you've found that, you know, that like a best practice, something that really you want to do this next time that you think are going to be, or a methodology, you know, Scrum or any of these things.
That's an interesting question and one that So I just went to a number of launch events for Visual Studio, and I got that question actually more times than I thought I would about, they'd heard some stuff about MQ, and are you going to make it a methodology that's going to ship the product and all sorts of things? And I'm like, hold on a second, you know? So I think...
You could write a book, you know. How to ship software in 30% less time, or, you know,
right.
By avoiding dependencies. And
well...
What?
I'll say some things.
I think Bart should say something.
A couple of things. Dependencies are good, because at the end of the day, it's the integrated product that counts. So we could cut down dependencies, but then we'll have a product that doesn't look like one product, looks like multiple pieces.
Yeah.
It's how you deal with those dependencies that's important. So that's number one. Number two, it's really hard to be disciplined and to take your time and think and plan. But if you do that, you reap great, great rewards. It's hard to spend the time and do the right design, the right automation. But if you do that, that works really well.
Yeah.
If you want lessons, those are my lessons.
Yeah.
Well,
one thing Amnon loves to say is that right now we're in a position where the code manages us. A lot of the decisions we want to make, we have to figure out what's the impact, right? What's the ramifications? What problems does this cause? And we don't want to be in that position. We want to be in a position where we manage the code and the experiences of the things we do. And that's really what MQ is about. It's about clearing our debt, get it off, you know, stop hiding underneath the covers, get it on the table, get it eliminate. You know, what are some things we can do to move quality upstream? Because we can't really put those kind of quality gates in place today, because the minute we do it, you know, we'd be in bug debt forever because we have a lot of issues. So it's like, get it cleared out, move the quality upstream. Okay, that's good by me. And make the people happy to come to work every day and get their job done.
That was another thing I thought about, morale. I really think that, I think Amnon talked about this one as well. It gave us the opportunity to say, okay, it's up to the team. The team had to make some changes. So let's give them the opportunity to make the changes and get their ideas on the table and give them the time. And those two things paired together really sets up a situation where people are motivated to come in and work and motivated to solve these problems, because they're solving problems that's going to make their lives easier for the next product cycle.
Yep. It sounds like you guys are reading Mini Microsoft, listening to everybody here. And we'll just be out, because everybody's reading it on the outside. Morale comes from shipping product on a regular cycle and hearing the customers go, I loved that feature. I loved that new, you know, quality thing that you shipped. And going for 4 years without shipping seems like it can drag. Because I'm on a team that's in the middle of a long shipping cycle, you know, Windows Vista. And, you know, it's not fun having to wait for product. It's more fun to have a product team that ships, you know, every 2 or 3 months. Is the internet shipping cycle, the services shipping cycle, starting to affect how you guys think about software?
Oh, I think we have a number of teams that are definitely, you know, moving towards that model today. And all the teams are starting to have more impact from the internet. And we see things happening on, you know, internet time. And so I think that we definitely are pushing in that direction.
Yeah.
But morale is not just about shipping.
Yeah.
Morale is also about, you know, coming to work and taking pride in what you do.
Yeah.
And feeling great about what you do and how you do it. It's not just, you know, you don't get high morale by, you know, one event every 6 months or a year or 2 years, doesn't matter how often you ship, right? You're happy because you do something you like doing, because you enjoy doing it, because you don't feel like you're... You feel like you're doing it in the best way possible.
You have to ship something that customers love. You know, that's where you get the...
Right. And so
it's like the Xbox team right now, their morale is off the
wall. We ship a CTP to customers every 8 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Every 8 weeks, people install this thing and look at it and give us feedback. And so, you know, we have lots and lots of opportunities to give to customers and to hear the feedback, right? I think part of what we're trying to do with MQ is to give people the opportunity to set things up such that they feel great about how they're doing things, and they feel great about their day-to-day work, and not just about, you know, the thing that comes out at the end.
Yeah. Is it tough working on a team with that? How many, I mean, there's hundreds or thousands of employees in DevDev, right? I'm not even sure how many. It's a big building here. Is it tough working on something like that rather than a small little team?
Well, you're in a division with thousands of people, but you're on a team. Like, I'm on the Visual Basic team, and more specifically, I'm on the Visual Basic deployment team, and there are three devs on that team, and there are, three QA people on that team and two PMs. And so, like, that's my team. And, earlier when Doug was talking about how it's, like, Visual Studio is, I think you said six or seven, like, different business units that all kind of are separate but integrated in a weird way. And so your day-to-day is a small team, but then you've got larger concerns kind of looming over you. And that kind of dependence, and that, that slows you down, and that's kind of dependency management, I think, that we're actually trying to get to in MQ. But I think we should actually dive into what we're doing for
Go
MQ
for
as opposed
it.
To thinking about why. We now all know why, and so let's, I guess, what are kind of the high-level items, that like things that we're trying to change? You mentioned like clearing out bug debt and moving quality upstream. Like, I guess kind of...
But we have four themes.
Four themes.
So the first one is get clean. So like I said earlier, a lot of what we want to do before we can move, get some great processes in place and some good tools, get tests running anywhere, get product sources and test sources living side by side, and a lot of those great things that we want to do, we have to get rid of our debt. So our debt areas are product bug debt, test case debt, test infrastructure debt, and test automation. We want all our instrumented binaries up to 70% automation, so that in the future product cycles, a way we can measure quality is through an automated test pass, and we don't have to take a month or so to do that. We can take, ideally our goal is to get down to 10 days. Then once we get clean, we have stay clean. So now that we have eliminated this debt, how do we prevent ourselves from ever accruing it again? So things like quality gates, we're going to do OACR, Office Automated Code Review, code.
What do some of these things mean? Because if you're on the outside world, you don't know you don't know Microsoft lingo. So like you say, bug debt. What does that mean? And then
okay, so there's product bug debt, and then there's test case debt. So test case debt would be where we're missing test cases, where they're incomplete or failing today, where we need to either get them cleaned up or get it cleared out. Office Automated Code Review is a tool that sits on the developer's desktop, which does static analysis type runs, and we'll look for those kind of defects as the developer is writing code. So, the goal is to remove the defect as close to the point of injection as possible. So we're trying to move our quality upstream, which is our third bucket. So we have get clean, stay clean, move quality upstream, and then there is make our life funner. So some of the big pain points.
That doesn't mean more beer bashes.
but I need a proposal on that one. Make it happen.
Yep.
So those are the main themes for MQ.
I guess you mentioned quality gates as kind of a way to drive quality upstream, and I think this is something that the Windows Vista team has been doing, and I think Office did it a little bit as well. What's kind of, I guess, talk about coming up with some examples of like what's a quality gate and like how are they enforced and things like that, which I guess would probably necessitate talking a bit about
right.
the VBL structure.
Well,
right, yeah, so that's another one.
Yes. Quality gates came out of the desire to have essentially shift from being code complete, which is a concept we use in Microsoft, which essentially means that the feature has been coded and now it's ready to have all the other things done to it, like testing and things like that.
Performance.
Exactly. To moving to what we call feature complete. Feature complete essentially means that it's ready to be handed to a customer, either to be consumed as an API or actually be used. So that's a radically different thing. So what are the things that you need to do to be able to do that? Well, it's got to be tested, and it's got to have automation against it so you can regress test it very easily. It's got to have code reviews. It's got to be against spec. The spec has to be, vetted out to a detail that's appropriate. You have to have done security checks on it. You have to do all this stuff, right? If you think about like all the processes that need to be done before you can actually ship entirely, the quality gate or feature complete is you put the stake in the ground. You say, I'm going to do all these things before I put into the product. Quality gates are a way to measure those things. And so things like we want X percent, like 70% code coverage to be in place before you check in, or you have to have...
What does that mean, code coverage?
Code coverage. Well, Barry can explain that best, but...
Yeah. I think we talked about that with the...
Yeah, basically it means the amount of code that gets hit during testing.
Yeah.
So
an automated test run.
Right,
we
exactly.
talked about that on the debugging.
Right. There's a whole technical stuff about arcs and whatever, but basically the line gets hit. It counts as being code coverage. So feature complete drove the idea of quality gates, which is a concept, as you mentioned, that's being used in other divisions. Ours, I think, are a little different. They're a little more,
because we've actually we're doing them later than what those guys did, we actually can be a slightly more prescriptive. And we also want to make sure that they're very their measurement is very automated, so that it's lower, it's pretty low overhead. But to be fair, even though we didn't have quality gates before, we did have check-in requirements and RI gates and those things. This is just kind of an evolution of where we've come from.
I don't know if you guys talked at all about how we do testing, because I worry that you know, people wouldn't understand how we do testing. And you know, we talk about test automation, that we do actually, you know, 99.something% of our tests are automated, or our test results are automated. What we're talking here is about having discipline to, you know, add the little bit that's required in order to significantly decrease the manual testing work we're doing. Because automated tests just work. What we're trying to attack is...
You can't argue with them either. Says it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
We're trying to eliminate the manual execution of test cases as much as possible. They're mostly not there today, but there's a certain amount that's still left, and that's what we focus on to try and decrease the length of our test paths. The other thing we're focusing on is making sure that we treat issues with the test and issues with the product the same way. Because today we have distinction between the two. We give preference to issues with the product, and so we sometimes end up with a bunch of test cases that are, you know, not working, not because the product is broken, but because the test case is broken. And that's something you need to get cut off on.
Yeah. Does this process let you guys talk about your overall feature set at all? For instance, the Office team is just about to release their new version of Office, which has a new ribbon bar. And that obviously came out of a period in time where they said our UIs are just becoming too overloaded with features. And they were hearing all this customer feedback about, hey, I just don't know how to use this thing anymore, and so they went back and really redesigned the thing from ground up.
So we have another process to try and figure out how to do this better for the next release. And that's really something you should do another video on. But that's not the focus of MQ. MQ is about
engineering
side, and not on the how do you figure out what the right value proposition for a product is.
Got it.
And I'm going to jump back to test automation for a second. One of the great things that is kind of happening on my team that I think is kind of cool is that when you have all test cases being automated, you necessarily start to kind of blur the line between what is a tester and what is a developer, because testers are developers. They just don't ship their code. They write automated tests against that code. Yeah. And it's cool to see that, like, what a dev, and there's some other proposals that kind of bring dev and test even closer together. Mm-hmm. And that kind of intimate relationship between people who test the product and people who develop the product, I think, is going to be one of the great benefits of what we get out of MQ, and the idea of, like, you know, breaking down that barrier between us and, you know, getting us working together earlier and things like that, and that kind of great stuff.
Are you talking about pair programming at all? Like, put a developer and a tester in
the
office?
It's more like breaking down the boundaries and having them as a feature team, you know, a team that coalesces around an objective or a goal, that being the feature, and does what's necessary to make it of, you know, high quality and a good experience for the customer. It's not about, well, I'm a dev, so I'm writing code, and you're a tester, you write tests. It's about, you know, bringing them together and putting a level of accountability and commitment on the team.
Right. Well, it's all those factors that allow you to ship the product. It's not a single one. So why treat them as separate when you can really treat them together? We use the term feature cruise as something we're rolling out during MQ, and ours is, of course, it's a little different than everybody else's, I'm sure. But the basic concept is that you have these group of folks, right? PMs, QA, devs, UE, UX, everybody. They're the ones that produce the feature and produce the thing. So you have to think of it as everybody as a set working together. You can't think of them as pieces down an assembly line. It doesn't work that way. It's much more cohesive than that. So that's what we're trying to capture.
Another interesting thing about Feature Cruise is, you were asking the question earlier about, we're such a big team. Well, the idea on Feature Cruise is you have a very small team, and they maintain that team throughout the life cycle of the whole feature from start to finish. And they have ultimate responsibility for everything about that feature. You know, from the dev to the test to the UE to the PM, they're responsible. And so when we start talking about the quality gates, they're responsible for making sure all those features meet those quality gates. And it's not to say at the end that we get down there and there's automation left to right before we check in, the dev will probably end up helping out with that, or even the PM could step in and help out and write automation. And it could turn out the other way around. It could be that the, you know, we've got so much code to write for this that the tester ends up helping someone writing pieces of code for that particular feature.
So a lot of MQ is about just changing the culture as much as getting some specific work items completed, you know.
Is this a time for you guys to look at your tool set and change tools, or like source code control, or any of that fun stuff? Because you guys have Visual Studio Team System now that you could consider using, right?
We are considering using some of it.
It's fair to say it's in our future. It's not happening right now in MQ because they're focused on getting their 1.0 out the door, but we're working with them to make that happen very soon.
Very cool.
I guess the great part about feature crews, I hate to keep jumping topics like this, but
this is fun. Yeah. I think it helps everybody watching at home to get an idea of what Microsoft's culture is like, what kind of thing we're going through right now.
Cool. So. The great thing I like about this, you mentioned that, you know, we're such a big company. One of the benefits of the feature crew is that you gain all the benefits of being the small team, but you gain also the benefits of being a big team. We all go to one place, which is main, and integrate and work together, but when we're actually getting stuff done, we kind of draw a little line in the sand and say, we're going to go over here and kind of get our stuff done as a group with everybody, and then you've got the great small team dynamics, but also the great, you know, division integrated dynamics.
Now, we talked with some of the Build Lab guys on another video that's running soon, and they explained how, like, the Windows Vista team has separate labs that people check stuff into, and then that reverse integrates into the main Build Lab. Is that sort of how Woodby, or your team build stuff?
Well, Woodby worked one way, and now, because MQ, we're going to work a different way, so
okay.
Who wants to field that one?
I'll take that one. So in Woodby, we had a very spread out and deep tree structure. If you were to draw it, it's, you know, looks kind of like a bee tree, right? It's very like this. But in Orcus, we really want to flatten that. And the reason is that latency between the leaf nodes kills you, right? So you end up having, in a complicated system, like early in Woodby, we may have had 6 weeks or 7 weeks or 8 weeks in between when leaf nodes would get each other's code changes. And we have dependencies across that that's really hard to manage. And then the other side effect is you actually end up getting, you get bugs. The only incarnation is in those in-between spaces, which is really frustrating. So part of Orcus, part of our desire here was to try to flatten that as much as possible so that latency goes as close to zero as possible. It's probably not a reality we'll be able to get to a continuous integration model.
When you say latency, what do you mean? Because latency means different things.
Well, I guess it's a term we made up. But basically, what I mean by it is the age of the code that my dependencies are feeding me.
Okay.
So if I'm on the CLR team and the C# team is going to consume something I'm writing, because of the depth of trees and the RIs and the FIs that need to occur to get my code over to them, it may take weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah, this bit me in particular, because I own the security property page. It has a button that says calculate that runs a new .NET framework tool that calculates your permissions, and that was written over in the CLR team across the street. And so I'd have a bug that, you know, I'd request it from them, you know, 4 weeks go by, it gets over to me, and, you know, there's a slight thing wrong with it. I send it back, and it takes a while to get over to me. And so that kind of, you know, that's just, you know, me sitting on my hands with one of my features broken, and we can't get feedback from customers, QA can't work against it, and it's just lag that's just, you know, wasting time. And so
it's really insidious, because this lag is causing people to sometimes do the wrong thing, because they have a sense of urgency to kind of put something into the public tree, you know, before it's ready, because of all this lag, so somebody could go use it on the other side. And, you know, which goes against, you know, the quality upstream. So, you know, finding a structure that makes the slag as small as possible is good both for quality and for dependency management.
Interesting. You guys are doing things that I don't know of any other company or any other group that, you know, because I go and visit a lot of companies lately, and I don't see anybody with this size of team or this kind of problem trying to solve it. So it'll be interesting to see what else you guys learn out of this process, and maybe how it'll change products that'll come out in the future, right? Be interesting. Anything else we should know about?
But I think we covered the four themes. You guys got any other wonderful insights into MQ?
I don't know. I'm really excited about it. I think it's like the very coolest thing the organization could have done. And, you know, just it's expensive to stop the product cycle, but to recognize that that's the way you change, yeah, as opposed to trying to do it mid-flight, it's just we're going to reap great rewards and benefits from doing this and taking the time out. It'll pay back tremendously.
Now, how do you know what time to restart? You know, is it just we're taking 4 weeks off and we'll start it up again no matter what? Or is it, did you guys have some goals that you had to meet before you started the process up?
Well, it's, you know, it's a milestone, so it's time box. So we listen to all the great ideas that are coming out of the organization. We had the general themes of our approach, and so for the most part, we chose to take on what we could accomplish in the time frame and do a very good job on, with the exception of debt. The debt is something that teams need to take as long as they need to take to get it cleared out. That's the one thing that's not time boxed. It's, you know, if you're going to go past MQ and into Orca safe for a little bit to get the debt, that's okay. You know, we need to do the right thing.
Got it. Well, thanks for spending some time with us and explaining what's going on.
Sure.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank
you. The dev organization.
One thing I'll add. So,
okay. You get to.
I like hearing myself talk. So you mentioned postmortems.
Yeah.
There's sort of like a big postmortem, and did we do a postmortem? Postmortems are great. The problem in postmortem is actually taking action on,
yeah,
what you find in the postmortem. MQ is about taking the action. It's not about doing the postmortem. We actually started thinking about this and putting the team together probably a year ago. And the main goal was to make sure that we create the tools and the capacity and the time to actually execute on the things we learned in the postmortem. So it's not just the postmortem, it's actually taking action on it. It's hard.
Why share this externally? Why have a little bit of transparency into?
Oh, I love,
because it seems a little bit like dirty laundry almost. You know, cleaning up the dirty laundry.
So there is no doubt in my mind that, you know, when people listen to this and then, you know, they'll post on Slashdot, you know, look how screwed up Microsoft is. They're not doing any automation. They haven't figured out they need to do automation, and they have bug there, and they have all those things. And you know, that's fine. Every engineering organization has some of these things, some of these challenges. It's important for me to be transparent about it so people know that there's actually very, very smart and dedicated people here. They're working very, very hard to build great products, to have best-in-class engineering. And, you know, all you need is just this culture of continuous improvement. Try to do better next time. Try to do better the next time. And, you know, at the end of the day, you always, always, always win. And I think that's important to show the answer. You know, there's a lot of self-criticism here at Microsoft.
Oh, yeah. and most of it out on the blog.
I think that's a great thing.
Yep.
A lot of people are worried about, you know, how people are going to perceive the company with all this, you know, self-criticism. My take on it is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to show people, you know, what we're actually doing about it, which is way better than, you know, not telling them and not being transparent about it and letting them own, you know, guess their own reasons and their own solutions, as the average reader on Slashdot would.
Yep.
Would see.
Yep. So well, thanks for inviting us over for a half an hour.
Thank you. Okay.